Brittany Friedman, and some of you stayed for their first session. I'm going to get started. I'm currently the General Studies Elementary Principal at Hillel Academy in Pittsburgh. I also teach fourth grade General Studies some period of the week, and I am also working with the Consortium of Day Schools for their Speakers Bureau, and we are starting a council for General Studies principals across North America. Should I never even thought it was past that, but we're going to start with North America. So, super excited to be here. This is a really nice opportunity. If you don't have a worksheet, a packet, you're going to need one. They don't have slides. I'm actually going to... That's from the other session. I don't know exactly how to turn it off right now. So this is a little bit of a different type of workshop. When I first went into it, I've been teaching, this is my 18th year. I went into administration 8 years ago. And after the first, when I got there, everybody was like, help us with classroom management. We're at a loss. And then we were coming up to, I think it was like a President's Day, Martin Luther King Day, professional development. And I sent out a survey. Everybody wanted to work on classroom management. And I was like, there's no cookie cutter answer to classroom management. There's nothing I can say that's going to, and this is my own teacher, this is my own school. There's nothing I can say that's going to be the deal breaker to helping you feel like your classroom is settled. It's not going to work for the same class. It's not going to work from year to year. It's not going to work the same for boys versus girls, Judaics versus general studies, science versus English. It's going to be different. And I was at a loss. I read things. I looked at responsive classroom. I looked at all sorts of things. And there's so many amazing tools out there. And I didn't know what to say to them. And like at the last minute, I was at another conference. And then I was on a plane back. And the whole flight home, I was like putting something together. And it hit me that classroom management is not necessarily, there's no system that I could stand here today and say, go back and do this. But there is something I can tell you. And it comes from knowing yourself as a person, what your values are, and how you're going to use those core values of your own personal life. It's crazy behind closed doors. But everyone has things that they, in the public, that they want to emulate and model about themselves. And those are what I'm going to ask you to think outside the box. We're going to identify those values, which are going to be different probably for most people in this room, and see how those values are implemented into your teaching environment today. And maybe your room, you'll start realizing that your room might not be as chaotic or as different as you see. When I was giving a model lesson, when I moved out to Las Vegas and they hired me, it was my first administrative job, and they asked me when I came out to visit the school to teach a model lesson. Now, I wasn't going to be a teacher there, but they asked me to teach a model lesson. And the rabbi that hired me, he described it as, he was like, you were like the queen bee. Everybody was flying around the room, and it was super chaotic, but everybody was learning. I'm like, is that a compliment? I'm not sure. He just hired me, so I think it's a compliment. He was like, it was insane. He's like, somebody might walk in and think, she's out of control. Like, she's crazy. But I'm a busy person. I want my classroom to be busy. I want my classroom to be messy. At the end of the day, I want it to be clean. But while we're learning, I don't mind if there is paper all over the room as long as everyone's engaged. And that's, like, my thing. There was once a book I read, a little bit controversial, but this guy was super inspiring to me as an educator, and then something controversial happened, so I don't always like to share in his personal life, but he wrote this book, like, Teach With Your Hair on Fire, and it was, like, a true story, because, like, he was, like, in a science lab, and the kid's hair, like, caught fire or something like that, but, like, that's it. Like, I want there to be energy and vibrance and excitement for learning in my classroom, and when I start my classroom, I have two rules. I tell all of my students a story, which I'm going to say a very, very short version of because that's really not what this is all about. I was born with a bilateral hearing loss. I wasn't diagnosed until kindergarten, and though my very dramatic New York Jewish mother told the doctor something was wrong with me from a few days old, no one believed her. They didn't test for hearing loss when I was born. I am older, and I probably look. And they finally, in kindergarten, my mother said, something is not right with her. And I got hearing aids in kindergarten. I struggled through school my whole academic career. Even through high school, I was probably like a C student. I remember being in, my parents put me in this very uppity college preparatory private school, thinking I'd get like more individualized like education. And they would hand me back these essays that I worked nonstop on. My dad helped me. I edited, I tried, and I got a D. So, and then I would go back, and I would go back to teacher and say, I don't want to be a D student. I worked really hard on this, and I don't want to be a D student. And I could do extra credit, and I could rewrite the essay and get an average. And then this went on through high school. I had tutors. We had free periods. I don't know if those still exist anymore. I'm not really in the high school world. But we had free periods, and I would chase down the English teacher and chase down the history teacher and say, help me make this better. I want to go to college. And it turns out that I got better. And the last paper I wrote for high school was a history paper. And it was a final, and they handed it back, and I got an A on the first try, 3 4 years. And then I went to, if you don't know, typically kids with hearing loss tend to be about 3 years behind in reading and writing. That's like an average statement. I don't know if it's the same now, but that's not what my mother would tell me when I was a kid. I probably also had ADHD. She didn't diagnose me with that, but I probably did. I went to college. I went to a public college, and you know, there's thousands of people in the fresh, and there's hundreds of section of freshman English. And I turned in my first paper, and everyone got their paper back except for me. And I was like, where's my paper? And she was like, can you stay after class? And I'm like, this is college. We don't stay after class. Give me my paper back. And so I stayed after class, and she's like, could you come to my office? I'm like dripping with sweat. Literally, they kicking me out of university? Like, I don't think I did anything wrong. I'm like, what on earth could this woman want from me? I didn't even, it was a class. It was a big lecture class. And she's like, I just wanted to meet with you. And I was like, about what? She's like, your essay. I'm like, is everything okay? And she's like, where did you go to high school? This was the best written essay in the entire freshman course. And I was like, really? I was like, I don't think you're, and I just like burst into tears. And the message I give to my students is that things are going to be hard. It took me till I was 18 years old to be able to become a good writer, and I really love writing. It's actually my favorite subject to teach now. I was a strong math student. I teach it. I have taught it. I've done it. But I have no. I struggle with patience for kids that don't always get it. I've come a long way in 18 years as a teacher, but because I had such a hard time with reading and writing, it has become my passion to teach reading and writing because I just have a lot of patience. So my message to the girls that I teach, or the student, I don't know, I didn't always just teach girls, but is that you work hard. That is, we are respectful, we work hard. Those are my two values that I teach. Now my room is chaotic. My room is a mess. We sit on the floor. I don't care if they're, you know, reading and like doing some multitasking, but those are the two values that I say have to happen. We're respectful, and we work hard. And that looks very different. So what we're going to do today is something a little bit different. We're going to go through a series of steps. We're going to try to pick out our top three core values and find other people in this room that might also have similar values. I want to start, I have a little present for those of you that were in the first session or came in and saw all the mess. My husband shared this with me, and it's actually so funny because I have a Mora that does this, and I never actually asked her why. I have a Mora, but now I know. I figured it out. She starts with joke of the day, and I was like, me, because that's clearly not, I'm not a joke person. I was like, I always just like, okay, whatever, like 3 minutes of class wasted, like, she starts with a joke, whatever. But then my husband told me this story about the Rava and Gemara, who also, Gemara states that the Rava started his shiur with a joke. And it would cause laughter, and you could say that they don't know why. They don't know why he did this. But laughter loosens the environment. it creates a more relaxed environment. It builds connectivity with people in the room. Laughter can be contagious and make things happier and have a good mood. So it made sense. Her 3 minutes or 2 minutes that she starts off with the joke of the day before her Flemish lesson helps her break the ice. The girls are hyper from the morning and or, you know, from recess, and it helps settle them down, build connectivity with her students. And I was super inspired by this. So you could say that his core value was connectivity. His core value was, you can interpret however you want. But anyways, I bought everybody a smiley face pin so that you can remember that the idea of picking out your core value, and his thing was to start with a joke, and this is like a 1500 year tradition that like from 1500 years ago that he was able to connect with the students in this way. That's a reminder. So I will pass these out while we're working. But the first thing we're going to do is kind of just in a few sentences describe ourselves as an educator. What is your, how would you describe yourself as an educator? And then I will give you a little bit of time. You don't have to think of three. If it's just one, it's fine. What is something you're currently working on in your classroom? And what practices do you have in place? So why I passed out your presents. Start working on those two things. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Need a pen or a pencil? Would anyone like to share how they describe themselves as an educator? Go ahead.
I said I'm strict, but at the same time very caring. I want my students to reach their full potential by always trying, learning from their mistakes, and taking pride in them.
I'm already like firing. I can already pick out which values he's going to pick. Anyone else want to share?
Work hard to find the good in each student, regardless of their behavior in the room. Treat everyone with respect and show the students that they can achieve more than they realize.
Amazing. One more percent.
Warm, funny, kind, empathetic, creative thinker, spontaneous, goes with the flow, out of the box, but I teach creative art. I like this really fine.
That kind of, it's good. Those are all really, really good qualities. Now, does anyone have a goal or something that they're working on in their classroom, and how they, it's a, you don't have to fill out three, I just put three. something they're trying, it could be behavioral, it could be academic, it could be a learning, it could be something different. Does anyone have something they're working on?
To create a can-do atmosphere.
Okay.
So doing small independent work.
Okay.
Assignments and lots of praise and positive.
Amazing. Anyone else? Okay.
Yeah, I think it was like the culture of curiosity that, like, if you want to learn more, then I need to go, like, teach and give them more of what they want to know.
That's amazing.
Okay. Similar to that, I said foster excitement and curiosity about new things.
Okay, great. Yeah?
I want my students to learn how to be independent in their learning. I often tell them, I'm not always going to be with you.
I say that a lot.
So teach them skills where I find that they're lacking and help them learn how to learn.
Go ahead.
Foster a tone of respect to each other, to teachers, to environment.
What's interesting in everything that's been shared is that nobody shared a content board. Okay. Of like, I remember when I first went to administration, I said this in the first session, so the few people that stayed, I apologize, is that you got wrapped up in like covering material, and then but every single person who shared, and I'm sure more people wrote down, is that your goals are helping them be success, like giving them the tools that are not in your teacher manual or in your lesson plan that are going to help them for the future. The life skills that they need, the interpersonal skills, the people skills, the work skills, the respectful, like the be able to foster curiosity. These are the things that all of us are making priorities in our classroom. Nobody mentioned anything about content. So, you know, we kind of have this crazy job of like, I used to joke when I was a first grade teacher for 10 years, and I used to say, like, I'm so much more than a teacher. I'm like the school nurse, I'm the mental health counselor, I'm the stage performer, we used to put on these shows, and I choreographed these dances, we had like a diagraph dance, I don't know how many teach primary, and like, I made a whole show about phonics, I wrote a whole script, I did, American Holidays presentation, and like we would do all these crazy things, and then we also, like, I don't know how many of you have teacher shortage problems, but you know, we cover gym and we cover art and we cover all these different things that we're not specialized in. But every single person said that their priority in their classroom was to build really on these values that we're going to identify. So the next part of the activity is to, on the back there is a list of values. It is not limited to this list. I may or may not have used ChatGPT to help me come up with this list. I'm a huge fan of ChatGPT, so I could give a whole other session on that, and I think if you're not using it, you're at a disadvantage to yourself. It is a huge time saver. There are so many schools, I'm just going to pitch for a second, but like, it is amazing. There is like Magic School, Brisk, School AI, I mean, there's like a bunch of them, and if you're not using AI yet to help you lesson plan and come up with ideas, start. Go on, ask it. I did a session for my teachers back in August, and the kindergarten teacher was the brave one, and she was like, okay, write me a unit on how to teach bees. And I said, how do I teach bees to kindergartner? And it gave her like a month-long unit. Now, obviously, she has 30 years of teaching, and she tweaked it, but like, it was amazing. I used to spend hours Googling to find the perfect rubric for grading an essay. I just type into ChatGPT, you can make me a rubric of four columns and this many categories and for a narrative piece. And then you edit it to what you want. So yes, use it. It will save you a lot of time. This is the list. It is not limited to, if you have something that's not on this list or you want to make it more of a Torah, a Hebrew word, that's fine with me. But pick three, pick your top three. And you can record them on that front sheet. give me a thumbs up if you pick three. Thank you. Okay. So the next part, what you're going to do is on the next sheet, you're going to write down what you already do in your classroom for each of the three that you pick. So what practices, or do you have something posted in your room? Do you have a story that you tell? Do you tell a joke every day? What do you do to model those values? People, but I'm going to talk if you're still writing that down. Does anyone want to share? I've given some of my own examples of how they picked and something that they're currently doing in their classroom.
Okay, so I asked about this question very clearly with respect to your rent, to school, and the teacher. So what I do is I let students perform in school or like so many classes, I can prepare them, I set the right time.
You said compassion, right?
Yeah.
I have a very funny story. When my son, who's now 10, was 2, his three-year-old teacher did something similar. They had a shopping rug, so they did a little mask that they got like at the dollar store. I don't know, I can do it with face masks, but if you were angry or upset with someone, you'd go take a shopping rug and you'd roll it out and invite the person you're mad at to come speak from the shopping rug. And the teacher knew, like a visual, okay, talking us out, maybe I should go over and like help. So it turns out my 2-year-old got very angry with my husband about something. So he got a blanket, rolled it out on the living room floor and said, "Daddy, sit down! I need to talk to you!" And it was probably the cutest thing ever. I just had to share. But anyone else want to share from that?
One of my core values is personal growth. So when my students want to give up or tell me, "I can't do this, it's too hard," they hate doing this. But I make them repeat after me. "When things get hard, I'm learning." And I don't give them the answer, I just walk away.
It's amazing. I think that I had a student, she was in 7th grade, and she was very far behind in I was her principal, and she was very far behind in reading and writing. And she would cry all the time. It was just the gap just getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And we tried. I got her an IEP through the public school district. We had a lot of things in place. And one day she was crying to me in my office, like, what's the point? Why do I have to do this? It's too hard. And I said, well, what do you want? She was a dancer. And I said, like, what do you want to do when you grow up? And she said, just be a cleaning lady. And I was like, why can't you use your dance as your career? And I was like, you could open your own studio. And, like, the idea never even occurred to her. Like, that she could take dance and open a studio and teach other girls to dance. And she was like, I could do that. And she was like, yeah, but you're going to have to learn how to read and write. She's like, I will learn how to read and write. And so, like, you know, these are the kinds of things. Anyone else want to share? No. Okay, what we're going to do is, the next thing you're going to do, make sure I'm in the right order, is we're going to get up, or you can talk to the person next to you, but it'd be nice to get up. Get some moving around. You're going to find somebody in this room that has at least one core value of the same as yours, and you're going to share with that person. So you might have to move if the person next to you doesn't have to move.
I also had a business with No, that's
Thank you. sort of get the idea of what you mean.
Concrete to take back, but what I hope I'm giving you is a perspective that a lot of what you're doing already is probably the right thing, and just prioritizing support. I'll tell you a story. Like I give another workshop a lot of times. I've done this many times in schools about how to set up your classroom, like a environment thing like that. And one of the Rebbe's, he was at this workshop, and one of the activities they have to do is draw out their classroom. And then we go around, and he was like, I need help. And I was like, well, your classroom looks really amazing. I'm not exactly sure what you need. What do you need help with? And he's like, oh, it's only like a couple hundred square feet. It's in a trailer. He drew this like elaborate drawing of like, and I was like, okay, so what's bothering you? He's like, well, I have this my teacher desk, and then I have a table behind it, and all the papers just go back there, and then they get really messy, and I'm struggling to stay organized. And so I went to his boss was also there, and I said, take out the back table. And he was like, are you crazy? He needs the table. What's he gonna do with all the papers? I said, take out the back table. And I mean, I told the Rebbe, I was going to tell his supervisor to do this, but the idea was is that, like, if organization is something that's important to you, and your classroom is not organized, and you're modeling that it's okay to have clutter, and it's okay, then it's not going to be mirrored in the classroom. It's not going to be valued in the classroom. Sure enough, the supervisor did, his principal did email me later on and say that he did remove the table, and it was making a difference because it prioritized him to get things. He didn't need the overflow table. He just needed to return the papers to the kids and send them home. And it did help him. I'm usually not that blunt, but like that was like my advice. But the message was is that like you need to be modeling. And like I know one thing, a lot, I've done in three different schools. I've helped create like a Meadows program, you know, something like, I'm sure all of your schools have some sort of variation. And when you're trying to figure out what are the Meadows that you want to highlight, showcase, name your program after, like the values that are the most important to your school, if you as teachers can't model those, then it's not going to work. Like I always used to say, like, so we do like a brainstorming thing where teachers throw out things that are important to them. And I'm like, okay, but if you're the one having the conversation in the copy room and not modeling this, then this can't be what we model for our students. Like we have to be acting like what we think. Does anyone want to share anything they learned from someone? You don't have to say who it was, but if you heard something from someone else that had something similar to you that was maybe inspired you, gave you another idea, or just.
So I was talking to one of my friends over here, and we had different core values, but one of her, the practices that she does every day would benefit one of mine. One of mine is well-being.
Okay.
And she says mantras to her kids every day.
Okay.
That would be a really great way to boost well-being.
Yeah, that is great. There's like, I had a teacher who did yoga, I had a teacher, but like I would never be caught teaching over to my class, but like, you know what, you gotta have, it's your room, you're there all day, like you have to make it your environment, and there's nothing, it has to be mirrored, and then the kids will follow. Anyone else want to share something? Okay, so the last thing we're going to do on the back page, I think we have a few minutes, right? It's to pick one new core value that you would like to try and the steps you think you're going to try to take to fit that into your classroom. And it could be something that you thought you were that is important to you that you thought maybe you were doing, but now after this activity, you're like, maybe I actually didn't do it as explicitly as I thought I wanted to. But I know I have a teacher that is really big into growth mindset. So she does growth mindset books, growth mindset activities, and doing bulletin boards and things like that. But like maybe it's something that you're not always thinking about on a regular basis. Would anyone be willing to be brave to share something new they would like to try? Go ahead.
Expectations.
Okay.
How do you bottle this? Repeating the rules. Impact on the classroom. There's less wild cards.
Collect what?
Oh.
I didn't hear the last part. Impact on the classroom. You said what?
As a result, there's less wild cards.
Oh, less wild cards.
On behavior.
Okay, great. Anyone else? I think that with expectations, sometimes, you know, we were so good about introducing them at the beginning of the year, maybe after a long vacation, but reviewing those expectations throughout the year is going to be where you're going to build consistency. Sometimes we take for granted that certain things are just supposed to be natural, but he's identifying that, you know, that as a value, and he's going to want to be having that be built in naturally into his routine on a regular basis so that those expectations are clear and it creates a sense of order. Sure?
The person I was talking to said she likes making things relevant in class.
I love it.
I like that because that connects it. So she teaches high school girls, and I'm thinking how do I connect it with the second graders. But I think we can have like class discussions about it. Like, I'm not really being mean by making you not give up. Like, why might this be important? Or, I don't know, coming up with new reasons how to make what we're dealing with relevant in their
second-year-old
minds.
That's excellent, and I was actually planning on ending with a story. And I think you led into it. So in Las Vegas, there were lots of Torah programs, and as the new general studies principal, there was like very few secular programming going on in the school. And I asked my boss I said, I want 6 days. And he was like, you've lost your mind. I'm not giving you 6 full days to do like all school programming. I said, okay, 3. He said, 3 half. And I said, fine, 3 half days. So for 3 half days...
The second sharing session has ended.
I'm going to
go to the cafeteria for the conference.
Thank you. So I got 3 half days, and I got a bunch of parents involved. Also, we were a pretty... We weren't like a wealthy school, so I had like no money to work with. All of these programs were planned under $100. They were school-wide programs, and we had themes. We had teacher teams so that you could sign up and plan one of them. And I had parents that also helped with some of the legwork. And the idea was it didn't matter if you were a Rebbe or a kindergarten Mora or an 8th grade science teacher. Everyone was given a job. Kids were mixed up. It varied from... depending on what the theme was, what we did. So one of the things was it was an election year, and the rabbi came to me and said, well, you're the general studies principal, you can plan something for election. I was like, okay. And I was like struggling with how to do it where it wouldn't become political and controversial. And so we did a variety of different things. The local school had stations, and they were a variety of different things. And the middle school had to run a campaign. We had one afternoon. School actually didn't have a bathroom. So I got approval of, to narrow down to four possible mascots that the Rebbeim, the head of the school, were okay with. And they had been in existence for already 8 years, and they didn't have a mascot. So the middle school was broken up into teams. There were two, and they had 2 hours to put together a campaign. They had a headquarters, they had a supervisor, they were put into groups, they had to find a Torah component to why their mascot was relevant, they had to find scientific, like, they had to make a PowerPoint, they had to make a speech, they had to make posters, they had to rally, and then the whole school got together to listen to their presentation, then we had, like, voting booths, and we announced a mascot, which is still their mascot today, and then the 8th graders designed, like, the logo and t-shirts, and it was the whole thing. So I'm going around. It's a little bit chaotic. I got the elementary kids doing something. I got the middle school kids doing something. I got everybody everywhere. And Amora, she pulled me out of the room. She's like, you lost your mind. This is crazy. There's no way they're going to be able to pull this off in 2 hours. And she's like, I'm just going to make up a name. We're going to call her Rivka. And she is in tears. She is hysterical crying. I think she was like a 7th grader. And this is not practical. This is just too much pressure. And I said, this is going to be the most memorable day of her 7th grade career. I said, the amount that she is going to, I said, if you stand by her, I'm not telling you to do the work for her, but if you just tell her, it's hard, you're going to get it done. I believe in you. I think you're going to be able to do it, versus talking to me in the hallway about telling me how to lost my mind, and this is too hard. I think she's going to get it done. Well, Rivka's group won. And she went from hysterics to twitch. The teacher went back in, spoke to her, and she pulled her group together, and they were able to pull it off. And I think that what you said, I think a lot of times, especially now, when kids are just so used to having everything done for them, easy, instant, they want information instantly, they want it to be easy, they don't want to try, I think that is the biggest gift. So you didn't pick one that you would work on, I'm giving you a recommendation of one, is to teach them that it's okay to fail. And there are so many lessons out there of famous people that were the biggest failures, and you can Google it, it'll come up. But it's okay. It's okay to fail. It's okay to make mistakes. I go back to my original story. This is what's going to give them the tools to work through hard things, to build, I heard, independence, and I heard... flexibility, and it's going to kind of encompass a lot of these things. So thank you for coming. I hope it was inspirational and helpful, and I'd love to hear about things that you tried, and keep laughing.
That was great. Thank you so much.
You want to